Fue, fue, fue! Welcome back to another episode of Uncle Takes. We're your hosts, Monica and Tank. And today we're doing Baked in Brooklyn, a 2016 movie starring Josh Brenner, who plays David, and Alexandra Daddario, who plays Kate. A couple other characters, Ace, played by Michael Rivera, Mike and Joe, played by two no-names, and then some girl named Eliza, again by a no-name actress. The main character's name is David Shapiro. The writer is David Shapiro, so I'd imagine this is somewhat autobiographical, or he just decided to make himself the main character. I don't know, I didn't do much research into it, but... the 1 minute synopsis of this movie is that David, a pill popping aspiring writer in New York City, gets fired from his job at a consulting firm where he does organizational charts and Excel data entry. He gets fired. And despite having a college education, instead of procuring another job, because it's such a tough job market out there and the Dow is crashing and so are other markets, he decides to break bad and become a low-level marijuana dealer. Unbelievably, he manages to alienate everyone in his life due to his work ethic. But at least in the process, he gets a good story to write about, and he learned many lessons along the way. So I guess with that, we'll get right into it. The opening scene is him kind of awkwardly on a stage. He's about to do a live reading of his story. And the story is the movie, which we come back to, but it doesn't flash back and forth. We realize that he has written about his summer where he deals weed for a period of 4 months. And yeah, this is that story. But to start it off, you know, we get glimpses into his life. We know that he has... a job at the consulting firm where, I don't know, he just seems to be on instant messenger all day. And then as soon as his boss walks by, he alt tabs over to an Excel spreadsheet and then turns around and like awkwardly waves to the guy. Also in his spare time, he writes a music blog, and he is in love with non-weed drugs, like all pills. He'll take people's pills that are prescribed, that aren't prescribed. He doesn't really care what they are. Just loves eating pills, you know, and more power to him. If he loves pills, I think he should be doing pills.
Yeah, I think that's actually kind of important here, because you might think that selling weed gets him like into the world of drugs and causes problems, but he actually just starts out liking harder drugs than weed. And then that continues with nothing. It's not like weed is a gateway drug in this movie. It's like he just does a lot of drugs, and also he starts selling weed just as an independent thing.
Yeah, I guess the pills are a gateway drug to weed. No, he mentioned that every time he smoked weed in his past, he just gets paranoid and he hates it. So that's why he doesn't smoke weed. So maybe he did smoke weed in order to get into pills. And then he's like, whoa, these pills are much better than that weed. I'm never doing that weed again. But, you know, since I'm participating in these recreational pills, selling weed is like, you know, lower stakes in my opinion.
Yeah. But like, so the movie is sort of structured as if like, you know, he gets involved in the weed business and, you know, it sort of upsets his life. And part of that seems to be that he does drugs during that part, you know, as he's selling weed. But it's not, he did drugs before he sold weed too. He just continues to do them afterwards, and sometimes it annoys his friends. But it's not like there was a cause and effect there.
But his friends are the ones with whom he does the pill popping, right? Like they go to rooftop parties.
But he gets like mad when they throw a party for him or whatever. He gets mad, or he takes like some kind of laxative or something, and then I think his girlfriend and his friends are kind of annoyed that they had to like take care of him. But I just want to be clear that the weed did not get him into the hard drugs. He was just always into them.
loves the hard drugs.
That's all I was saying.
Yeah. So shortly into the movie, he's on one of these rooftop parties, which is out of character. Like, even from the get-go, he seems to be someone who wouldn't attend sort of a raucous rooftop party with a whole bunch of people. But he's there anyway, and since he has this music blog that he writes about, he plugs in his iPod, and that's where he meets Kate, who's played by Alexander Daddario.
Well, like, sure, though. Like, on one hand, if you, like, showed me scenes from his character talking, and, like, would you find him at a lot of, like, you know, rooftop music parties? I'd be like, no, like, probably not. He doesn't seem like he'd like them. But also, his, like, two hobbies are, you know, club drugs and a music blog. So this seems like exactly where he would be. But also, his character is constantly telling you, like, oh, I don't know what to do with my hands. And, like, I find dancing weird and, I don't know, weed is weird. So it's like, I don't know what his character is at this point. It's not like he's sort of like an outside person to this scene being dragged in. It's like this was kind of his scene. He just doesn't like to dance or smoke weed.
Yeah, I mean, he knows a lot of people at the party. Not only are his two roommates and good friends there, but his drug dealer and good friend is there, and she recently went to Mexico and brought back some mystery pills from the airport. And he just immediately eats it and says, oh, that tastes good. And then kisses her on the cheek and walks away.
Yeah, like, he just takes whatever drugs. Like, he's not particular.
Yeah, he's down to clown. Except weed.
Yeah, he doesn't like weed. Yeah, it makes him paranoid.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So anyway, yeah. This guy, to describe Josh Brenner, because I don't know, like, is he famous from anything else?
He's most well known, I think, from Silicon Valley for playing Big Head.
Okay, that feels like an important show. I just haven't seen it. For those that don't know, not a handsome dude. Probably
he's kind
awkward
of like
looking fella.
A short, awkward looking guy. In Silicon Valley, he plays like the... Well, in the first episode, he's sort of a normal guy. And later on, he's sort of like the catastrophically stupid friend of the main character who just gets like constantly stumbles into a bunch of money. But like... He's sort of playing like a very dopey character. And yeah, he's sort of like an awkward, like, yeah, he's not the typical leading man, you know?
No, I mean, but he reminds me of Michael Cera. Gives me Michael Cera weird vibes.
Yeah, I could see that. I think he looks even like a little bit less typical than Michael Cera even.
Sure. Anyway, my point is, somehow he meets Alexander Daddario, and they hit it off. I mean, he's in. She was taken by his awkwardness and fascination with music, and maybe he just picked the right song. Like, that's all it took in order to win Kate over. He just played the right song, and she asked him to dance, which I thought was just, you know, that was amazing. You know, that this dude, this goofy-looking fella, with very little charisma, you know, was just able to woo Kate in a matter of 35 seconds. It was amazing.
Yeah, it's really one of those movies where, like, it's like everyone is better looking than your average people, but Alexander Daddario is way better looking than your average person, and this guy is not really better looking than your average person. So it's, I mean, the movie, like, acknowledges that it's strange that this girl likes him. I mean, Alexander Daddario plays this character a lot, where, like, she's just inexplicably really into the main character, and, like, the movie does so little to explain it. And this is probably, like, the worst of those movies, where, like, you just have zero idea what she sees in him. He just seems kind of, like, completely charmless. But, I don't know. Like, here we are, right?
Yeah.
She does like him, and I mean, do they say that, I mean, do we get to the part where they go back to hook up?
Oh, yeah, well, after this rooftop party, I don't know, they have a good time dancing, and that ends with them on his bed, and they're about to hook up, but then she suddenly stops, because I think he touched boob, and we learn that she is in a long-term relationship, or a long-distance relationship with, I don't know, some guy named Simon who goes to school in Virginia. And I guess they have weird rules that allow them to make out with other people, but maybe boob crosses a line.
Yeah, I don't think it's clear that that's, like, a rule. I think she just said she felt uncomfortable, like, she felt like it was cheating once he touched her boob. But, like, given what happens later in this movie, like, I don't actually know. I don't know if she breaks up with the guy later, or if, like, she just sort of gets over her, you know, one night sort of, I don't know, hesitance to cheat on him.
Oh, but, no, she ultimately breaks up with Simon.
Oh, does she break up with him?
Okay. Shortly into the movie.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I want to say, I feel like in every Alexander Daddario movie, there's at least one scene of her talking about her boobs. And
that's
like,
true. Yeah, that's, yeah.
I feel like that comes up in every movie, and I don't know if that's just because, like, they think it'd be weird for people to walk into a room with her and, like, not address it. Like, you know, everyone would be like, we have to address the elephant in the room. Like, let's just talk about it, get it over with. But in every movie, I feel like she has to mention it. And, like, I sort of wonder, does she want to do that? Or, like, writers just, like, forcing her to have those conversations in every movie?
You know? I don't know. I'm just glad that this movie didn't have bare guy ass, because that was beginning to become a theme.
that was the theme.
Yeah, it's like she did the scene in True Detective, and then every movie thereafter just had nothing but, you know, naked men in it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. So, they don't hook up, kind of, but she stays over. She insists on staying over.
Yep.
And then I think it's sort of like a montage of them just sort of dating.
Yeah, I guess he embraces the friend zone. So the next night, he's at another one of these rooftop parties where, I don't know, did he take drugs? Because the first night he met her, he took the Mexican drug from Eliza. I don't know what drugs he took the second night, but he wasn't feeling the party. So he bails, and instead he goes and hangs out with Kate. And then it's another montage scene where I guess they're dating, but they're just not hooking up. So he's just, you know, fully into the friend zone.
But, like, then she moves in with him. Then he gets fired, right? No, she moves in first. Because it turns out her internship at a law firm, I think? Turns out to be unpaid?
Yes. Yep. So... she broke up with Simon, right? Because he's... One of those cutscenes in the montage is him dicking around at work. And it's just like, this is the second time that he is instant messaging while at work. And then as soon as his boss walks by, he just alt tabs back to the same Excel spreadsheet day after day with this. It's not even a different tab of the different in the same spreadsheet. It's the same tab of the same Excel spreadsheet. And I don't know. He's just convinced his boss that he's making a ton of progress on that one sheet.
At some point, it looks like he's just copy and pasting cells for some reason.
Yeah, he's just pressing Control D or something. I don't know what the fuck he's doing. He's not making any progress. And it's also not related to organizational charts, which is what he says he does at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, because it's just a bunch of numbers. It's not like it's people's names or something. Like some. I guess that's just like what the, you know, the visual reference for business is in movie language is like an Excel spreadsheet, so they just had him say some words early on, but then they're like, oh, we need some kind of a, you know, shorthand for him doing business work, and it's like, open an Excel spreadsheet, we're good here.
Is that what people think? Oh, I work in Excel, so that's what happens? You just copy numbers into other cells?
Well, no, I just think if they assume that, like, oh, do you do, like, you know, if you work in a business organization, you probably spend most of your day messing around in Excel. Mm. So...
copying numbers, you know, from one cell into the next. Doing
like
the
maybe he
things.
Could sit there and be making an org chart, but that'd be like a little more in depth than, you know, just having, you know, some producer open an Excel spreadsheet and have some kid type in numbers.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, anyway, so yeah, we learn in that scene where she breaks up with Simon and gets an internship that's unpaid, and his response is to ask her to move in. But in that scene, like, we already know that both of them have iPhones, yet they were green text bubbles. Did you happen to catch that?
No, but does that mean they don't have iPhones usually? Is that what it means?
Yeah. Yeah. But everything, there's so much product placement for Apple in the movie that I found it odd. Anyway. So then after he invites her to live with him, even though they're just good friends that have occasional sleepovers that are non-sexual. He discusses it with his roommates, with a walking bike scene. I just have it written down.
Yeah, I think they're walking around pushing their bikes.
Yeah, my question with that one was, what the fuck did the bikes add? Like, they ride bikes on weekends. Like, they do drugs at night, and then they ride bikes on weekends. That's what we know about them.
I guess it was just they want to, like, have him... He, like, bikes around a lot in this movie. I'm guessing they just wanted to have him have a conversation. And, you know, he's, like, a guy who bikes a lot, but then just found it difficult to film when they were riding bikes. So just had them all push bikes, because that was easy.
Yeah, but, like, leave the fucking bikes out of it, and you accomplish the same thing. Why do you have to be pushing bikes in that scene? I don't get it.
I mean, I agree with you, but I think they maybe tried riding the bikes and then just, you know, backed off of it halfway through.
You think they were like, oh, well, we already paid to rent the bikes. We might as well use them, you know?
I mean, I kind of think so.
Okay. So anyway, the one roommate's like, I don't know. That doesn't seem like the great start to your relationship. And he's like, well, if she lived upstate and commuted to town, that would be even worse for our relationship because then I'd never get to see her. And then the other roommate's like, you don't even know this girl. This is too sudden. You're a fucking idiot. And he's like, I don't care what you say. Fuck you guys. And he goes forward with the plan.
So when do they start dating? It's not now, right? They are dating now.
As soon as he was dicking around at work and Kate texted him, I broke up with Simon, I think that was basically, hey, we're now dating.
Okay. Because, yeah, I wasn't sure like when exactly they started dating, but I don't understand why she had a boyfriend in the first place. I guess for, like, the end, maybe, but, like, I don't think she needed to have a boyfriend for this movie to play out exactly the same.
Oh, yeah, totally. So anyway, after that, after he informs his roommates that he's, you know, not listening to their advice, he goes
now,
to work.
Is it like, do you usually have to have permission when you have someone new move in if you have roommates? Like, do you usually have to run it by them, especially if they're going to be living there for an extended period of time?
She's not just visiting,
like, she's living there.
Yeah, I'd say if the visit is longer than 3 months, that's probably the threshold you should.
And she's trying to, like, you know, to redecorate stuff in the living room too, so it's like,
that's right, she's bringing in new furniture, maybe hanging things on walls.
Yeah,
who knows,
really not visiting, she is living there.
Yeah,
so like, it's not even like he asks his roommates, he just sort of tells them and they just have to deal with it no matter how annoyed they might be.
Yeah.
So
I probably put that threshold at 3 months.
Three months.
And this was, I think, indefinite. So,
but by then she'd established squatter's rights in New York. He could never get her out of there.
I guess that's why he ultimately pushed her out.
I guess he did sort of push her out. I guess she wanted. Okay.
So anyway, he gets to work and he's about to go into his office. And instead his boss that he always awkwardly waves to after he alt tabs, takes him into the conference room.
Okay. So he asked her to move in the same conversation. She says she broke up with her boyfriend.
Yeah. No, that's his response.
Yeah.
She's like, I got two pieces of news. I got an internship that's unpaid and I broke up with Simon. And he's like, great, move in.
Yeah. It's like, this whole them not dating thing is so... it's the fakest not dating of all time. Like, out of two people who are not dating, they are the most dating. I don't know.
Yeah. So anyway, the boss fires him, and he says that apparently David's not the only one. But in this scene, David says, hey, yeah, if my mom calls, can you tell her I stepped out to lunch? And he goes, what do you mean? Like, for the rest of the day? And he goes, no, for like the next 6 months.
Yeah, like until I find a new job, I'll let you know.
I'll send you an email.
So this movie came out in 2016.
Oh, yeah.
But the setting seems to be like the height of the Great Recession, right?
It seems to be 2009, 2010, but it's not, because the movie came out in 2016, and we have no reason to think that it's any time other than 2016.
A period piece? Yeah.
So, and he's telling a story, he's doing a reading about last summer, so everything is recent activity. That being said, a lot of the technology that we see in the movie could be from like 2009. You look at like the AIM they're using. This is pre-Skype, pre-Zoom.
Yeah, it does look older, sort of. I wonder if it was maybe shot earlier. I mean, I guess when did the recession like end? I guess it ended around 2006. But like, yeah, I don't know. I guess I don't never viewed, you know, the Great Recession. So I guess the Great Recession ended in 2013 or 14.
Okay.
And, like, the real crisis ended in 2009. But this seems like it's supposed to take place, like, because I think there's Obama on, at some point there's Obama on the radio sort of giving a speech.
Yes.
So it's very much supposed to be a, I don't know, so something around those times. But it doesn't appear to take place then.
Yeah. Well, so there was another piece of information. In one of the scenes, they were watching TV, and on the TV it says, the Dow went down 20% today. So I did some Googling about the all-time records for the Dow's decrease in a single day. The only time it decreased more than 20% was in 1987, and I just feel like this movie doesn't take place in 1987.
It could have taken place in 1987.
No, because there weren't iPhones. There weren't MacBooks, you know?
I guess that makes sense.
So, yeah, not a lot of shit adds up, but, yeah. Anyway, so after he gets fired, he goes back to his desk because he has to clean out his desk by the end of the day, and he just continues to dick around and AIMs with Kate. But oddly enough, he still maintains the facade of the Excel spreadsheet in the background, which I thought was just fantastic. Like, just, you know, what are you still doing, you know? Just shut the computer down and fucking leave. You're done, you know? Anyway, so later that night he has dinner with his immigrant parents, and, you know, we learn that they gave up their entire lives back in their home country, which I don't think we figure out where it was, but...
they're very Jewish, so are they coming from Israel? Or they... you could be Jewish anywhere, I guess, but...
They didn't sound like they were Israelis, though. They sounded Eastern European.
His father had... I mean, Tova Feldstein is his mother's actress. I don't know who... I mean, I think she's just like a New York Jewish.
Huh.
But, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. It doesn't come up. They just gave everything...
Almost nothing comes up. It's weird.
They gave up everything in order to just be in America, in order to play cops and robbers or something. His father tells a weird story. And in that, David asks, did you ever want to be a bandit? And I think his father says, yeah, obviously the bandits are better than the police. And that plants the seed that, you know, maybe he should do some illegal shit in order to make a living instead of just finding another job in his field. So now he's jobless and he lives with Kate. And she also isn't getting paid. But his drug dealer friend Eliza, who had given him the mystery Mexican pill, comes over. And, you know, this girl's a character. I don't think there's a scene in the movie where she's not smoking a joint. I think she's smoking weed in every scene, which is fantastic. So she comes over to sell him pills and stays a little bit, smokes a joint. And then immediately after she leaves, he listens to an imitation Dr. Dre album and decides, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to sell weed. That's how I'm going to make a living. Not even going to look at any fucking job opportunities out there. I'm not going to look at Indeed. I'm not going to look at Monster. I'm not going to go to any fucking company's website and see if they just have any job openings. I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to do it. I'm going to sell weed.
Yeah, so, like, I watched this movie a second time. Because I remember watching the first time and thinking the jump from he loses his job at a consulting firm to the only option is to sell weed is just so, like, is like an A to B step for him. There is no in-between stuff where he, like, looks for other jobs, but it's a recession and it's hard to find jobs. It's literally just he decides selling weed is the only job.
This is only option.
Right.
Yeah. Clearly.
And, like, yeah, I don't know how he got there. Like, he tries no other. Like, usually you'd have the scene where they're, like, going through the newspaper or circling things or, like, you know, calling people and asking if they have openings or, like, something to establish he had no other options. This just seemed like something he wanted to do. You know? He was like, oh, I'll just try selling weed for a summer. Like, how hard could it be? I was a consultant. I know how to Excel spreadsheets.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It was quick. It was unsupported. But anyway, he makes this decision, and he tells Kate his plans later that night. And he says that dealing seems exciting, glamorous, and lucrative. And if all else fails, it'll at least give him something to write about, which is his true passion.
Yeah. Is writing his true passion?
I think pills are his true passion.
Like, he keeps all, like, providing an excellent customer experience might be his true passion. But, like, we see him trying to blog a couple times, and he keeps telling us he writes a music blog. But, like, most of the time it looks like he tries to do it. He just has a blank screen and then thinks about it for a second and then shuts the thing down.
Yeah, like, he can't do it.
He seems to have no passion for music or blogging, or, like, writing, I guess, in general, throughout the entire middle part of the movie. Like, he occasionally mentions it, like, oh, remember my writing thing? It's like, no, from when would I remember? It's never happened on screen.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what to tell you. Anyway, after that, he meets with Eliza's contacts, and this is when we meet Ace, played by Michael Rivera. And he is just his continuous awkward self. He's asking way too many questions, asking if he can get a discount if he buys in bulk. You know, and then Ace, being Eliza's friend, tells him, hey, I'm not going to rob you because of her, but you need to shut the fuck up. And he drops some other truth bombs on him because this is his foray into the drug game. And he's just giving him some pointers, you know. And he ends his speech with, stay paranoid, B.
Yeah, and he tells him, you know, because David keeps asking him, like, questions. He wants to, like, talk about his life. And the kid just tells him, don't talk to anybody unless you have to. Like, don't, you know, don't tell anybody anything. Don't be a part of your life. Like, you tell them nothing, you know, you just drop off drugs and move on.
Yeah. Did he heed that advice?
No, absolutely not. He, like, hangs out with all his customers. He's, like, best friends with all of them.
Yeah. Okay. So then, anyway, the next few scenes, there's a lot of scenes in this movie. It's just nonstop fucking scenes that are, you know, 15 seconds long. But he goes to a corner store to buy a scale and baggies, and there's a little bit of funny interaction there. He packs up his weed and, you know, texts 17 of his friends, hey, I sell weed now, let me know if you need any. But apparently that plan fails and he gets off to a slow start, after which he starts strategizing with Kate, who shows him a Craigslist couch to kind of spruce up the living room, because I guess their couch is a huge turd and it stinks. And he looks at these classifieds and has the brilliant idea that he'll just sign up for, like, a weed profile and say, let me know if you need weed. And he gets texts within minutes, which is great. because the internet is fantastic. And then the end of that scene is Kate gets off the bed, says that's absolutely fucking insane. You shouldn't look forward to selling drugs on the internet. This is not a good idea. And she walks away from him. And he's he's dedicated to it. So yeah.
So that is the end of that scene. Do you remember how this scene starts though?
Whenever they're lying face down on the bed, naked, presumably after hooking up.
Right. Yeah. So So they're both lying face down on the bed, at least shirtless. Then, you know, they talk about something. Then she like turns around, so you can see her back, puts on a shirt, and then she shows him the Craigslist thing. So like the point of her being topless in this scene is like stone nothing, other than so they can show some like back boob for some reason, which. I mean, I guess you don't need a reason, but just, like, out of all the gratuitous stuff, it's like, this movie doesn't have a lot of nudity, but, like, the stuff they do have just seems completely gratuitous. It was like, I don't know, if, like, because she just, like, it literally, like, cuts to her turning around, she, like, puts on a shirt, then they're like, okay, let's do the real scene now, we're both clothed, like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But, anyways.
Well, so I guess my question after that scene, right, because Kate doesn't think it's a good idea for him to start selling weed on the internet, because it's not, and I don't know why she doesn't break up with him right then and there.
Well, she's living in his house, I guess.
But she's not on the lease. Like, she has other living situation options.
Well, she'd have to commute from her parents' house, which is far away, I think.
Yeah, I get that, but it's just there's so, like, so few reasons to continue dating this guy.
Here's the problem, though. Like, she throughout the whole movie, she inexplicably likes him until she inexplicably doesn't. So it's just like it's so hard to tell why she should be with him and then why she shouldn't be with him, because it doesn't make sense that she's ever with him. You know, she just really likes him enough to like. Sort of cheat on her boyfriend with, and then just, I don't know, continues dating him even as he's sort of like a chumless jerk half the time.
Yeah.
And then breaks up with him because he's just as bad as he's always been, and then likes him again. Like, the ebb, like, she's on like a sine wave the whole time, but he's completely flat. Like, he's just the same thing the whole time. In some scenes she likes it, and then others she doesn't, and it's just, it's not clear. She wants to buy a couch for the apartment because she wants to make it nicer, but doesn't want him to sell weed. But she likes weed because he's like, I don't smoke, so I won't smoke my whole stash. And she sort of gives a smile, and he's like, ooh, I know how you can earn a discount. And she's like, oh, what more could I do? Like, I mean, like, it just. So clearly she's not like against weed. It's not like she's like anti-drug, like above the influence. It's just, it's never clear why she likes him. So then every scene you're like, oh, she should break up with him. But you're like, you know what? I felt like that before she got with him. I don't know why she was hanging out with him in the first place. So like, I'm not going to tell her anything's changed. I just like, I don't understand this relationship.
Yeah.
He just seems like he sucks. But he also she's 20 times as attractive as he is. So it's like, you have options. Like, I want to tell her like, you can do better. But other guys in the apartment seem better. And it's the same apartment. You know?
Yeah, Joe seems like a real solid guy.
Yeah, the roommates just seem like the same guy, but like less douchey.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, I don't know.
Well, anyway, the slow start with his text message of all his contacts quickly picks up after he pastes it on the internet. You know, apparently Craigslist works. And, you know, he gets... a text on his BlackBerry on his drug phone to meet MJ, and she says, I'm at this location, when can you meet me there? And he provides an oddly specific 32 minutes away. How does he know exactly how far away he is from every, like, if you live in New York City, do you know how many minutes it's going to take you to get to every single cross street in Manhattan?
I mean, I don't. But like, especially via bike, it just seems like, I don't know. Do you know exactly how fast you travel on a bike?
I guess he does. He does. And he can predict traffic patterns. Yeah. I don't know. But he says 32 minutes. And we learn that she needs... This is his first drug deal ever.
So, yeah. And throughout this whole movie, he keeps selling drugs in, like, the most brazen way. Without, like, in the most guileless way. And, like, I guess spoilers, but, like, you keep thinking it's going to come back to bite him somehow, and it just never does.
Well, that's because statistically, as he says, you know, he's probably not going to get caught. Because he's a low-level drug dealer.
Well, I thought he meant because he was, like, a white guy. But
oh, he did mean because he's a white guy, yeah.
But he, like, texts, he's texting people on the internet, he's meeting someone who looks like she does a lot of weed on a street corner. And her name is MJ. I don't know if the cops know that, but still. And they're just like... And he's just like walking up to people being like, I got some weed. Like, and yeah, like you sort of think like his inexperience will like lead him, you know, astray at some point. Never does.
Yeah, I mean, he at least, you know, asked her, are you a cop? You have to tell me if you're a cop. So... You know, maybe he's more careful than we're giving him credit for. You know, maybe he scopes out the area. Maybe he has a police radio that he listens to. I don't know. We never find out. But anyway, he goes back and hangs out in a stairwell with MJ. And we've learned that she's going to need a 20 bag daily.
Yeah, like, can she never... is this a girl who does not have more than $20? With her at any point in her life?
She can somehow get $20 every day, but she can't get $40 every 2 days.
Yeah, and like, why? How is it worthwhile for him to drive 32 minutes there in each way, I guess, to sell weed, which must have some kind of cost?
Yeah.
To sell $20 a weed? Like, it's an hour-long trip for $20, gross, right?
Oh, yeah. So I did some math on the markups. I think he has about 100% markup, so we can assume that he made $10 profit from selling her the 20 bag.
Yeah. And, like, at some point they say, like, you know, if you get caught, no one paying above minimum wage will ever hire you, but, like, he would do better on minimum wage.
Yes. Well, I guess they would then have to tax that. I don't know. What was the minimum wage back in 2009, 2010?
I mean, in New York? City? I don't know. Yeah, I imagine it's... I don't know. I imagine it's higher than the $10, but I could be wrong, I guess.
Yeah. Well, at least he has a consistent customer. I think that's what's promising about that. So, yeah, business is picking up. And he has a cutscene where he tells his mom that work is going well. And, you know, he's working till all hours of the night. He gets home at like 2:30 in the morning. And he's just, you know, accumulating money in this briefcase that he keeps under the bed. And then one of his next drug deals, he's at an apartment with like this real estate writer guy who just seems kind of dejected. And he starts sharing some personal information, breaking all of Ace's rules as he goes from drug deal to drug deal. After that, he sells drugs to a guy in a Lincoln Town Car. That's a famous actor who plays a very small role in this movie. What's he from?
I know him from Royal Pains.
Okay.
And he's also from The West Wing.
Gotcha.
I don't know his name. I think it's like... Mark Feldstein, maybe?
Yeah. So he cameos in this movie. And he just asks David to get in the back of the car and, you know, roll him a joint, and they drive around the block and he smokes it. And then at the end, he looks at David's bike and says, "Oh, you driving that Schwinn piece of shit that's super heavy? Here's some extra money. I'm investing in your business so that when you're a kingpin, you'll give me some free bags." which was weird because when would that ever work? That's like never going to work. I don't get it. We never see this guy again, and we never will.
No, I think it's just like a generosity thing. He just buys his one-time drug dealer a new bike. Like, he has some recurring customers, but I don't think this guy ever comes back.
No. I mean, and the guy's about to get let go. He has a meeting with the board of directors later that day. And it's probably because he makes poor business decisions, like investing in a fucking peasant drug dealer's operation by buying him a bike. Like, if he's doing that kind of reckless shit with the company's money, I would imagine the board of directors would need to talk to him about it. So, yeah. That's probably why we don't see him again, because he's probably homeless at this point.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, keeps giving money away.
Yeah. So anyway, then he goes and has a date with Kate in the park and shows off his new bike. He goes and buys more weed from Ace and shows off his new bike there too. Stops by the apartment, but he's becoming a workaholic and he's not spending a lot of time with his roommates or Kate at this point.
Yeah, I mean, so the whole middle of the movie is just him selling drugs, becoming like really focused on customer service, and saying that, you know, he needs to do really rapid response and delivery of this weed, and that's like his differentiator. It's like, it would sort of make more sense if he like sort of used his business background more and like really leaned into that in some way, was like, this is how I'm differentiating myself. But he just sort of like insists on, like, it doesn't actually matter that he sells weed for most of this movie. It's just that he's a workaholic.
Yeah. Right?
Like, that's most of the issue. The weed really is never an issue.
Well, Mike brings it up at some point. He's like, I got to worry about the DEA breaking down my door in a drug raid, right? He never clears it with the roommates that he's about to start selling drugs.
Well, he's really, you know, he doesn't clear a lot of things with his roommates, but like that's like one. But that the DEA never does break down their door, though.
No, never any threat of criminal penalty.
Like, if he just, like, sold Beanie Babies or something, or was, like, I don't know, a really attentive pizza delivery man, like, this movie would be the same for 95% of it.
Yeah. I mean, maybe some life lessons wouldn't be learned, and it wouldn't be interesting, you know, because he was doing it for the story.
Right. But the story, spoilers, is not interesting. It's just, like, him getting high with various people around New York. None of whom are interesting.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know.
Well, anyway, amidst all this workaholism, he's about to go on a date with Kate, who planned a surprise party for him with his roommates and a couple of his stoner friends. And I guess before they went to the party, he took two of Kate's clonazepams on her nightstand, but she said those aren't clonazepams, those are Zolpidems, and that just made sense to him. I don't know, maybe he has, like, did he go to business school, or did he do med school for a bit, or has he just really loved, because he doesn't seem to worry what drugs he's taking, he just
no he'll just take anything.
Why does he know what the drugs' names are or what they would do? He doesn't seem to care at any point. So, like, how does it even register that Zolpidems are apparently sleeping pills? Like, how does he know that?
I think because he takes so many drugs that maybe he's taken them all at some point.
I guess so. Yeah, just a huge fan of pills. Anyway, so instead of... I thought clonazepams were like... If it ends in zepam, is that a tranquilizer?
No, so I never went to med school, and I don't do a lot of club drugs, so I don't know.
Shit. Okay. Well, he accidentally took two sleeping pills. Which, actually, that scene was pretty funny, because he passes out at the table as he's trying to thank them for planning this nice surprise party, and he's just, like,
head back asleep at the table, and his friends are just over it because, I don't know, they're super judgy because he took these pills now when they take pills seemingly nightly and they don't have a problem with it then. But whenever he took the pills and it ruined the surprise party that they threw for him, that's when they sort of took offense to it. And I guess maybe they were just taking it out because he was being a shitty friend in other regards. And this was just a nail in the coffin, I guess.
Yeah, like, I mean, yeah, he's supposed to go play. Like, he just keeps blowing off his friends to sell drugs and his girlfriend to sell drugs. But that, yeah, the major issue is just he gets high, right? Which is a thing that he did the whole time.
Yeah, he's never not. He loves taking pills.
Like, he started doing. That's the thing. Like, so much of this movie has nothing to do with the fact that he sells weed. Like, it doesn't get him into harder drugs. It doesn't, like, you know, get him in trouble with the cops. It doesn't, like, I don't know, do anything, really. But he, you know, just, I don't know, blows off his friends and does party drugs, like, which he could have been doing anyways. Like, I don't know, nothing about it is specific to what's happening, I guess, is the part I have trouble with.
Yeah. Well, so more of him just being a shithead with his friends. I guess he's scheduled to play tennis with Mike, who then just proceeds to start pegging tennis balls at David for being late and a general piece of shit. And get some quips in there. He's like, oh, it's like I'm high or something. I don't know. I can't fucking hit the ball straight. Yeah, and this is where we learn that David just doesn't care about his friendships because he says, I'm fast and reliable. If I jeopardize that, my business is fucked. And Mike's like, I have to worry about the DEA coming to raid my apartment. And, you know, he says, have you even talked to your girlfriend? So Mike is clearly trying to tell David that he's being a piece of shit. He's neglecting his friends. He's neglecting his girlfriend. And he's way too committed to this job, and it's kind of ruining his life. But David's not having it. He's still committed to the weeds. And anyway, he goes back after bailing. He plays tennis for all of 25 seconds, and then goes and does more weed deliveries, and then eventually makes it back to his apartment, where Kate is dressed very nicely. Apparently she's going out to a party with one of her former roommates. And yeah, David's response to this wasn't, oh, let me get showered and dressed because I'm a piece of shit and I'll go with you. It was, hey, let me try to persuade you to stay in and not go to that party by telling you all these animal masturbation facts.
Yeah, and that doesn't work for some reason.
It was mind-boggling, right? Like,
which, I mean, if you heard this in the abstract, you'd be like, obviously that doesn't work. But if you've seen the rest of this movie, you're like, this is like kind of in line with all his other moves that got her. So like, why didn't this work this time? Like, how is she so pissed off that like the Animal Planet Masturbation Week is not landing for her? You know?
No idea. No idea.
And also, when she's in heels, she's like a foot taller than him and kisses him on the forehead.
Oh, it like was noticeable in that scene, yeah.
Like he's a small child. Like, it's just like, it seems like she doesn't like him, but it's like, I don't understand. Why did she ever like him? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it. So, I don't know. I guess that's the end of that one. And then the next day, he's back at the real estate writer guy's apartment. And he's still giving too much information. He's saying, oh, I like my music blog. But something that this movie does well is it's self-aware. And the stupid shit that happens in it, a lot of it gets addressed by characters by the end of the movie. And one of those is, like, this dude, he loves popping pills. And he gets these from Eliza. We never find out what they are. But every time he puts one in his mouth, he chews it up. And I thought that was weird. And it was one of the questions I had. But fortunately, the real estate writer guy says, why the fuck do you chew up your pills like that? And David's response is that they work faster. So thank you, real estate writer guy, for asking the question that I had for the first hour of this movie. But anyway, in this scene, we realize that the real estate writer guy could theoretically offer David a job in writing, which is of interest. And he says, yeah, check out my music blog that I haven't touched all summer. But, you know, you can get a snippet of what my writing style is.
So he also says at the start of this scene, like, he starts off by saying, yeah, you know, you can't just be a part-time drug dealer. It's like, you definitely can. Lots of people are part-time drug dealers.
100%. You don't need
this is not like a full-time job for a lot of people.
Yeah. So anyway, on his way out of that guy's building, he gets shaken down by the doorman. And then he, you know, goes and meets Ace to get more weed. Which, every time he goes to Ace, like the first time he buys 2 ounces, and I think 2 ounces can make, I don't know, 30, 20 bags. And that seems to be like an every few days sort of need to meet with Ace. Were you getting that impression that every, like twice a week, he was going to Ace to buy 2 or 3 ounces of weed?
Yeah, I think he says, like, see you in a... Right? Like, it seems like it's supposed to be, like, accelerating, right?
Yeah, because he says, I'll buy 3 ounces this time. So I guess his business is doing well. But Ace says, I'll see you next week. So the pace seems to be that, like, he's selling 2 to 3 ounces a week. And that just doesn't seem like a full-time job.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how much weed sells for. I mean, they talk about how much he makes at the end of it, and it's, like, a decent amount of money, but not, like, a ton of money. So, like, I don't know. It's tough to tell how much she's selling. I mean, it's the only thing he does, but again, he's riding an hour to sell, you know, make $10. So...
I bet he's working 16 hours a day, so... I don't know, maybe he's selling 16 bags a day? You gotta figure MJ, the 32 minutes away, he's doing other deliveries along the way. And then we see he sells eighths to certain people, and I guess that's more product moved, so I don't know if the markup is similar, but you gotta imagine you'd rather sell 8 eighths than 30 gram bags, right? Like, just from a volume perspective...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I did do, like, the math at any point because it didn't seem relevant because, again, none of the drugs seemed relevant. But, like, yeah, I don't know if it's consistent throughout, but I didn't know if he was just, like, the daily deliveries just was a little nuts because it's, like, that can't be worth it. It's just, like, skip one day's worth and then the next day you'll have $40. And then buy 2 days of drugs. And then by the end of those 2 days, you'll have, like, or just do that for a whole week. Like, don't smoke for a week. And then you can buy it week by week. If you somehow have exactly $20 every day. Why doesn't he set some boundaries with this girl so he doesn't have to deliver to her every day? I don't understand this.
He's committed to customer service, you know? You need, I'll deliver. I'll be there. So anyway... He gets shaken down by the doorman from the real estate writer's building. And then he tells Kate about it later that night, but she has no sympathy for him, because why would she? And he gets defensive by this. She pleads with him to get his life right and just starts laying into him. And he says that he doesn't know what else to do. This is the only skill that he has. He's good at it, and he's satisfied with himself. But she tells him that she's felt neglected for 2 months. So now this is Mike that's told him he's a piece of shit. Kate, who's way too hot for him, has also told him he's a piece of shit. I don't know that his parents have told him he's a piece of shit, but he kind of
I don't think they know what's happening, right?
No. He kind of keeps them in the dark. You know, I guess he's still out to lunch at the consultant firm, as far as they know. Yeah. So anyway, after Kate basically gives him an ultimatum, he then says, okay, you know, whatever you want to do. And she goes, well, what are you doing Thursday at 7? And he goes, whatever you want to do. And she goes, I like dinner. And, you know, they're the kind of like, maybe he's going to turn over a new leaf and he's not going to be a piece of shit. So they make dinner plans, which is great. You know, maybe he can salvage this thing, which is really what he should have been doing the whole time. Cause inexplicably, if this girl's into you, I think you just drop everything in your life and try to keep everything, you know, hold on to her. But anyway.
Yeah. Like he goes all in on the weed thing. I feel like he should have gone all in on the Alexander Daddario thing. Because that seems a lot more fleeting and pressing. You know what I mean? Like, that's like the thing you're like, this is a lot more inexplicable. Like, I can find a different job. But, like, this is less replaceable. Like, I don't know how this happened. So, I'm going to lean into this. But he leans out of it. He has no interest in it. It's the weirdest thing.
Yeah, he's over it.
I feel like
he's
Alexander Daddario is constantly in movies where she's inexplicably into guys who are inexplicably not into her. Like, how do you get typecast as that character?
I don't know.
Why is the conceit of every movie that, like, she's going to be way more into her love interest than they will be into her? You know? I don't get that.
Doesn't make sense to me either.
No.
So anyway, he's out making deliveries the next day, or the day of the date, and he's on the phone with her, and he's like, yeah, I just got one more delivery, but I'll see you there at 8:45. So somehow he's going to be an hour and 45 minutes late, for this date, you know, and he's doing one more delivery, and I guess some European in a bathrobe answers the door, and, you know, invites him in. And he's like, oh, you want to smoke some weed? And David's like, nah, I got this thing I got to go to. And then the bathrobe European guy's like, oh, well, I got girls coming over. And David's like, nah, like, I got this thing I got to go to. And then the bathrobe European's like, but I got these pills. And that is what does it. That's enough for David to say, you know what? I'm abandoning Kate. She can go fuck herself. I would rather take one of these mystery pills and see where this night takes me, knowing full well that, like, it's probably going to cost me the relationship.
Yeah, the guy, he literally asked the guy what the pills are, and the guy says he doesn't know.
Just, the mystery is, it's too alluring. You know, he couldn't resist. So anyway, he takes these pills and has a great time with these two prostitutes and this European in a bathrobe.
bathrobe European.
Yeah. And he wakes up. Kate has moved out and left him angry notes on his chalkboard wall with just, I mean, fuck, was that perfect penmanship with multicolored flow charts. Like, she put some time into that fuck you note, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was,
it had the go fuck yourself, had like zigzag perfect oval. It was, I mean, professional shit. I didn't know.
I guess she was just betting on him not walking back home as she was doing it, because it would have been like a little embarrassing to be like, okay, let me finish this. Like, I'm halfway through the flow shot, and like, you know. Although he seems to wake up with it. He wakes up and sees it, right?
Yeah, I guess he was so out of it that he doesn't remember how he got home. He was also wearing a different shirt, so we don't know what happened to him that night.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. He just got high and hung out with some, I guess, strippers or something.
Yeah. So, you know, Kate's done with him. And
she also says he's not as good at sex as he thinks he is. But it's like, okay, like, again, why was she with him? Was it just because she wanted weed? Because she does say he took some weed, felt like it was owed to me.
I guess she liked the free weed because she earned it. And then she also had an apartment for free because she was an unpaid intern at the law firm.
I guess so.
So maybe she's a prostitute in this movie because she's with him just for drugs and a living situation.
But like, I feel like the thing is, if you were a prostitute, you wouldn't get mad that the guy like blew you off for dinner. You'd be like, oh my God, good thing I don't have to deal with this asshole tonight. Like, it just seems like him not being around would have been really good for her, but she like really wanted him around. She's really upset that he's not putting as much effort into this weird relationship as he is.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe his neglect and his dedication to the job meant that he was more restrictive about how much weed, like maybe her allotment for weed dwindled and it was just down to the apartment that she was benefiting from this relationship. I don't know. But she had enough and she bailed, which finally. Anyway, so then he goes back to work and he's at the real estate writer guy's apartment again, who's throwing a party that David wasn't invited to, despite him sharing some personal shit. And, you know, obviously the job that the real estate writer guy offered to David isn't going to work out. And the real estate writer guy is just super cold about it, gets 2/8 and slams the door in his face. So yeah, like, should have just heeded Ace's advice and sold the drugs and then left and not shared your life story with the real estate writer guy. But, you know, lesson learned, I guess.
Yeah, I guess, like, the point of the movie is that he was, like, spending more time on his relationship with, like, fake friends as instead of his real friends and girlfriend. Right?
Like, yeah.
But it's not, like, framed that way that much. Like, he does spend a lot of time with these random people and seems to, like, consider them his friends. But it's not, like, framed like he's like, no, I want to hang out with these cool people I'm meeting, thinking they're his friends. It's just framed like he's treating it like a business, but it's just, like, bad at it, sort of. Like, it just does all the talking that he's not supposed to. But he never, like, sort of, like, tells his friends, like, that he's maybe that's the frame. Like, maybe I'm just not quite, maybe I'm being overly particular with that framing.
Yeah. I don't know. So anyway, he needs to buy from Ace again. So he meets him in the corridor of his apartment unit or whatever. And then as soon as David leaves, Ace immediately gets busted by the cops. And we see Ace looking at David riding away on his bike. And what was weird is, like, I didn't think much of it, but Ace, as like Ace's character, thought, you know, David is riding away on his bike. And when I first watched it, I just thought, oh, Ace is probably wondering or hoping that David just gets away, right? But as soon as Jess saw that scene, she goes, oh, did David turn Ace in? And I never made that connection. Did that occur to you?
I never thought that he did turn him in.
He definitely didn't.
There was no reason that he would.
It doesn't benefit him in any fucking way. Why would you think that? You know, but like, how does it benefit David?
I did
to turn
think
in?
As he saw him running away, he might think that he also... I thought Ace might think that, but I never myself thought that.
Gotcha. You know what I mean? I didn't make that connection.
It is just weird because David's leaving the building. Like, he basically, like, holds the door open for the cops. Like, they really pass that close. So given that I think we, like, in the text of the movie, he didn't turn them in, I guess maybe just because he's the white guy, but it is weird that the cops aren't like, hey, you, walking away from the drug dealers we're arresting, like, with a backpack full of stuff, like, let me check you out real quick, you know?
Well, to his credit, he had the backpack on the entirety of the movie, not just when he began dealing weed.
Right, yeah, he carried with his name on it too.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, there could be anything in that backpack. It could just be snacks. So anyway, yeah, Eliza calls David and asks if David turned Ace in, and David says, "No, that's fucking Looney Tunes. Why would I do that? It doesn't benefit me." And Eliza's like, well, I kind of gave him your whereabouts, so sorry about that. And then in response to this, apparently Ace tried to call David. The call didn't go through. But after learning that Ace thinks David turned him in, David makes no fucking attempt to call Ace and clear the air and just say, like, hey, Ace, I just wanted to kind of hash this out. You know, I heard you thought I turned you in, and I'm just not sure why you would think that, because it doesn't benefit me to turn you in. Like, without you, I don't make money. So this is a symbiotic relationship here. Can you please help me fucking understand why you think I would turn you in? He just makes no fucking attempt whatsoever. And I thought that was puzzling.
But, like, they have a mutually beneficial agreement. And yeah, it doesn't make, like, he gains nothing by turning him in.
Yeah,
I don't know why his
stupid
friend, like, said, gave him the address or whatever. But yeah, why isn't he proactive about, like, telling this guy, like, even if he doesn't think the guy will believe him, the guy is going to find him eventually. It's like, why not just be like, hey, no, I didn't turn you in. I wouldn't do that. There's no reason I would do that. You know, it just doesn't make any sense.
Well, what's crazy is, despite his lack of attempt to remedy the situation with Ace, he still thinks it's a good idea to continue selling weed, right? I guess he just wants to sell the rest of his stash, because the relationship at that point for his supplier is tarnished. Like, he's effectively out of the weed game at that point. But
wait, he doesn't find a different supplier.
No, he doesn't even consider that. He just keeps going about his business, and is just going to sell out of his stash for the next couple days, which is effectively kaput. So yeah, his response is just piss poor. It doesn't seem business savvy, so that business degree is fucking useless. I'm sure that now I understand why he got fired from the consulting firm, because he had no fucking business acumen whatsoever. yeah, just complete piece of shit, and I'm glad Kate broke up with him at this point.
Yeah, I mean, listen.
So
he's a certain type of guy.
So anyway, yeah, he decides to sell through the rest of his stash. I guess he still has daily customers, but he's becoming disenfranchised with dealing. And then we get this weird scene. It's tough to explain. Like, he's going to see MJ in one of his daily deliveries.
It was played by Lindsay Broad. Do you know her at all?
Well, so I think I saw that she's the girl from The Office who, like, tries to hit on Jim despite Jim being in the relationship with Pam.
Yeah, she's, I mean, I don't know. She's in that, I mean, I watched The Office, so I recognized her. But, like, she's in a very, very small part in this. But she's, like, I don't know. I thought she was a more established actress. I think maybe she's not. She was only in 12 episodes of The Office, but I recognized her. She has, like, 5 lines in this whole movie, but.
Yeah. So I'm going to try to describe this scene. he goes to meet MJ at her apartment.
As he does every day.
And he doesn't generally go into the apartment, but this time he chained up his bike and he hit the buzzer and she let him in. And
well,
so
there is a scene earlier where she asks him to stay and smoke with her and he just says he has other customers. Right?
And she says something to the effect of, oh, that's what you always say.
Is it just me?
And he goes, he says something that he shouldn't. He doesn't just walk away. He's like, nah, something, 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 and it makes it awkward, right?
So I think, like, she has been, like, inviting him in. She wants him to hang out with her, I guess.
So she also inexplicably sees something in him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe. Or not. Maybe she also wants weed, it seems, but.
Could be. So anyway, the final time that he sells weed to her, he chained up his bike, hit the intercom buzzer, and he gets let in. The next scene is both of them sitting on the couch.
Yeah, like cut to, instant cut.
Instant cut. He is sitting there fully clothed with his head leaning back over the couch. She is sitting on the other side of the couch, topless, but with her knees up against her chest, and she's hugging her legs.
Yeah.
So you don't see anything. And then he just, I don't know, in an exasperated way, leans forward and asks, were you just doing that to get free weed? It's fine if you were. I'm not going to be offended. Blah, blah, blah. And she takes a couch pillow and covers her face. And that's the end of that scene. I don't think anything else happens in that scene.
Then it just cuts to him walking out.
Yeah, so we're not 100% sure what happened, but our best guess is that maybe they hooked up. Like, this is him being disenfranchised with dealing. He knows this is the last time he's going to see her, maybe, because he no longer has a supplier. And he decides to finally hook up with her because this is probably the last time he'll see her.
Yeah, but, like, I don't know why she doesn't say anything back to him in this scene. Like, why she doesn't say... Like, she covers her face like she's now embarrassed or something, I guess. But, like, it seems like she slept with him for some weed, which she seemed to have wanted to do the whole time. But, like, it feels like if you were going to do that, you'd have a different scene earlier. And I guess maybe they did, and I just sort of skimmed past it, where, like, she would, like, you know, say she's short on money or something. You know, can he give her, like, a discount of some kind? He'd be like, no, you know what I mean? Like,
but you can earn it.
Yeah, like, but she would say, like, oh, is there anything I could do or whatever? And he's like, no, it's the $20, like, he'd be focused, you know what I mean? Like, so this would be a change. Well, like, the change here is that I guess he said yes to going into her apartment. His old reason was that I don't even think he knew that she was trying to... I don't know if she was trying to sleep with him earlier or if he knew that, but he never said, oh, no, I have a girlfriend. He said, I have other deliveries. So, like, it's just not clear. Like, I mean, the obvious thing is she slept with him to get some weed, I guess. But I just don't know what... Like, she doesn't say anything in the scene. I don't know why she's embarrassed by that. Or maybe, I mean, I guess maybe she would be embarrassed by that, but she doesn't, like, express that in a, I don't know, coherent way. And he's, like, really upset by this.
Yeah.
I mean, he walks outside and finds out his bike was stolen, which, like, he's then upset by, but I don't know. If she did have sex with him for the $20 worth of weed, that he was only making a $10 profit on anyways. I guess, you know, it cost him $20. But, I don't know. He does daily deliveries to us, so it's like, I don't know. It's not a terrible deal he's getting.
Yeah. Well, after that, he gets his bike stolen. Then he gets jumped and robbed and beaten up by Ace, who reminds him, stay paranoid, B. Then he... You know, he's back in his apartment. He calls his mother for consolation.
Okay, so when he gets robbed, though, he gets robbed by a guy with a gun who's one of Ace's guys, I guess.
Yeah.
And, like, five other guys. Like, no matter how paranoid he was in this situation, he's just getting assaulted and robbed at gunpoint. It's not like he was, like, you know... there was anything he could have done to, like, avoid this situation. If someone just, like, wants to, like, track you down with a gun, that just happens. You know what I mean?
Maybe he has to watch his back. I don't know.
Could he have watched his back more, though? Is there, like, a thing he could have done that was different?
He's not paranoid enough. He needs to be more paranoid, clearly. I don't know. But he didn't pay attention to any other Ace advice, so why would he have paid attention to that?
No, it feels like Ace should have been more paranoid. Because he's the one who got arrested. And then released, apparently. But we skimmed right over that, I guess.
Well, what were the laws in 2015? Well, I guess this was 2009. So, like, it's weird to watch a movie about dealing weed in New York. When, like, is weed now legal in New York?
Yeah, it feels like it just... Well, but again, the police... are just not a big deal in this movie.
At all.
Like, they arrest Ace in this one scene, I guess. But, like, you know, this could just be, like, dealing weed without a license. Like, I don't know. It, like, weed could be legal in the world of this movie, and it would barely make a difference to the plot of this movie. there's a couple lines that they would have to change, like when the guy's like, the DA could come, although the DA could still come because it's federally illegal or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. That doesn't seem to matter is the thing.
So anyway, the next day he's hanging out with his roommates who are always playing video games and typing on their laptops. Maybe they have a music blog as well. Or maybe they're picking up the slack for David's neglect of the blog. I don't know. But anyway, they see that David.
I like how the music blog never has a name.
It's just the music blog, what?
Yeah, it's just like, it's like so thinly sketched out in the movie that he never like references its name. Like, you'd think its name would be like a stupid pun of some kind that like, you know, would just be like a one of joke, or it'd be like something they talked about when they first met. But it's just nothing. Like, they just never, like, it's just like, I do a music blog. He mentioned it 25 times. But, I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, in this real talk with his roommates, they start dropping some truths on him. And finally, we hear from Joe. And Joe, you know, just a solid friend the whole time, hits him with a line. Because David asks, hey, have I been a shitty friend? And Joe says, I think if you were to add up all the time in the last 4 months that you weren't making mistakes, it would total about 6 hours. And then in that scene, he goes, Kate was so hot, I thought she had to be mentally defective to be with you. So, like, the movie is at least self-aware, and it knows the questions that you fucking have. So, thank you, Joe, for asking the questions that we want to know the answers to.
But, like, I don't give movies that much credit for, like, pointing out the thing that they did that was weird. Because, like, they could have just made this character a little more charming or a little more attractive or something that, like, would keep her interested.
I think they're limited in some way by autobiographical integrity.
Yeah, this guy's like, no, I cannot cast a better-looking actor to play me.
He's like, no, I mean, hey, I'm a real weird fuck, and I look goofy.
However, in real life, was his girlfriend like an Alexander Daddario type?
Couldn't have been. I mean, maybe he felt that way. Maybe that's how he remembers it.
But like, it's just, they could have just made him like funnier or more interesting or gave his music blog a name or just like anything that would have made her be like interested beyond just having a place to live, which she then got tired of. You know what I mean? It wasn't like she got tired of because, you know, the drug dealing was like creating some danger. It was like he was just inattentive towards her. It seems easier for her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, the movie does point out that it's weird that she was with him ever.
Yeah, which I appreciated. You know? Because it also didn't make sense to me.
And then he takes some drugs for the pain of being beat up. In this way that it's like he's taking drugs as if he as he does in every scene. But in this scene, he actually has like a reason. As if he needed a reason to. Because, again, he takes drugs in every scene. So, I don't know.
Oh, man. Do we ever learn what pills he's popping from Eliza? Like, what he eats a lot of pills throughout the movie that seem to be in a prescription bottle. Are those opioids?
Yeah, I don't know. He seems to consistently put, I mean, early in the morning, he says he does a lot of hallucinogens.
Interesting.
But I don't know if those just come in, like, pill bottle form usually. But again, I don't know a lot about drugs, so.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so that's, you know, the end of the movie. There is a scene where he rides upstate to deliver Kate some candy. We learn she's back with Simon. And then he, like, steals a kiss and rides away into the sunset while getting chased by Simon. There is a brief scene where he's, like, back at the reading. And everyone in the audience seems to have enjoyed his story. And then that's it. That's the end of the movie.
Well, I mean, that's not the end of the movie.
Is that not the end of the movie? What happens after that?
Did you stop watching then?
There was more? The credits started rolling.
No. No, when he's telling his... After, you mean after the conversation with his friends when it cuts back to the framing device?
Well, you tell it.
So then he bikes to her parents' house?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I said he rides upstate to see Kate.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought you skipped over that part.
No, I mean, it's just like... And she, you know, she's having dinner with her parents and she's surprised to see him. But I guess the question we had at that point was, he had her address, and part of her very well-written note was, hey, please forward my mail to this address, which is my parents.
Yeah, I don't know, how much mail she was getting to her, like, one, you know, random boyfriend's, like, is that where her checks were going?
I have no...
Her not checks, intern. I guess, right? Yeah.
Like, what mail was she...
Like, it's not like she has bills, because, like, she doesn't have an apartment.
It's just, what mail was she getting at that fucking apartment?
I guess that was just so he could have her parents' address.
Yeah. That way he could surprise her by showing up on the doorstep and interrupting dinner with Simon.
Yeah. And, like, in this version, I mean, and she seems to like it when he just kisses her and then rides off with Simon chasing him.
Oh, she's super into it, yeah. In the presence of Simon.
Yeah, like, Simon, like, comes out and is like, hey, why are you, like, you know, hitting on my girlfriend who, like, I guess didn't technically cheat with on him, but, like, definitely did, right?
Yeah.
So, like, if you're... Yeah, I mean, because she was hooking up with him, sort of. Stopped, and then they, like, dated. Then she broke up with him and then moved in, like, the same day. So it's like, I guess by, like, some strictly watched technicality, they didn't cheat. But, like, they did, though. Then he's, like, sitting there, like, crying. Like, he acts like such a little kid in this movie. Like, his naivete is, like, played up when he's dealing drugs, and he's, like, in tears. He's like, oh my god, you have your boyfriend's here. Like, I just don't get what his thing is. And then he just kisses her, and she's like, Simon, don't chase him just because he, like, kissed me in front of you. Like, just like a very brazen act from this guy. The best part is, dude, the boyfriend, so they start kissing, and the boyfriend has come out of the house, and he's standing on the porch watching them talk, and they move, like, a few steps over, and then Josh Brenner starts kissing her. And there's, like, you know, a good 5 seconds before the guy, like, the boyfriend, casually strolls down the stairs and is like, hey, stop kissing my girlfriend 10 feet away from me. Like, what was he doing there? Like,
I don't know. And then why was he not running until Josh Brenner got on the bike?
Yeah, he slowly walks after him.
Yeah.
Then the guy drops on the bike, and then he sort of, like, half jogs. Like, they just, like, I guess didn't have the, I don't know, attention to block the scene such that this guy's motivation, because he's, like, chasing the kid down on the bike and doesn't catch him, but, like, is keeping pace with him. But when the kid was slowly walking away, he gained a lot of ground on Simon because Simon was just standing there like an idiot.
Yeah, maybe they were supposed to be at the bottom of the driveway, at the base of the driveway, and Simon was supposed to be on the porch. But it was like, I don't know, if Simon really wanted to, he could have been at the guy's bike in 5 seconds. He could have just, like, went down the stairs and then walked 2 steps, and that's where they would be.
Yeah. And then the kid only walks to his bike with the guy just, like, staying behind him, staying 3 steps behind him.
Yeah, maybe he didn't know he was going to chase him at that point. He was still working it out in his head. He was like, I used to be okay if she was kissing other guys, but this guy, like, sort of rode upstate on his bike and now kissed her in front of me, and that's kind of not cool because I'm here.
It did seem not cool.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe he was still working it out.
Like, yeah, how comfortable he was just being, like, cuckolded. Like, what? It's just so weird. Like, I mean, the blocking of that scene was just terrible. But, like...
Oh, man. Well, anything else about this movie that you wanted to touch on?
No, I mean, I thought it was a pretty bad movie. Probably one of the worst ones we've watched.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I thought it was really... You liked it?
So, outside of, like, maybe shitty directing, low budget, and just general production issues, and maybe some questionable acting and casting.
Okay.
Outside of that, I thought it was a good movie.
So, you know, one of the things is it sounds like you're doing a bit because you listed, like, all the aspects of filmmaking. So I don't know if, like, you actually thought it was a good movie.
See, like,
or if you thought it was terrible.
It was a comedy, right? It's a comedy and
drama. Was it a comedy, though? What were the funny parts?
I think it had some quippiness to it. Like, the scene where he was buying the baggies in the jewelry store, or buying the baggies in the scale. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm buying the baggies for the jewelry. I thought that was pretty funny. I thought his response to getting fired was funny. I thought Joe telling him, you know, you've had 6 reasonable hours in the last 4 months. I think it had some funny lines to it.
You know what the thing, the problem with this movie is? So Josh Brenner, I think, is funny in Silicon Valley, playing a character that is a lot like how he plays it in those scenes. Where he's just sort of, like, really immature. Like, he wants the guy to tell his mom he's still working there because apparently she calls. You know, like, where he's, like, really awkward and doesn't, you know what he's doing when he's trying to buy the drugs and is asking about, like, the bulk discounts and the different strains and, like, you know, that type of stuff. Like,
yeah.
I think that's all, like, sort of works. That's, like, not a big part of this movie. And it's, like, not really who his character is. You know, like, his character, like, if his character didn't do drugs other than the scene with the European guy, I think this would be a way better movie.
Interesting.
I think that sort of makes the movie not make any sense. You know, like, if he was just someone who, like, got into the weed thing. And, you know, this is, like, a thing we've seen. Like, it's sort of like, the show Weeds, right? But, like, you know, someone who, you know, they're like a fish out of water in this thing. He's, like, the, you know, the least likely weed dealer ever is sort of, like, how he's played early on. Except that he talks about doing a bunch of harder drugs. Like, that's just so at odds with how his character... Like, if you showed the character... in any scene where he wasn't doing drugs and asked if you thought he did any drugs, people would be like, absolutely not. But that's like all he talks about. And all he does. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. You know? And I think it just kind of ruins the movie because it just makes his character like so inconsistent. Because like, yeah, it is like, and all the funny parts you listed sort of happened 2 minutes in. Right? It's like before he starts selling weed.
No, I think, you know, at the end, Joe starts laying some truth bombs on him. It's funny, quippy lines. It's just, if there's funny lines to it and it makes me laugh, and makes me giggle, you know, pretty low bar for a comedy movie to be.
Really? I didn't find this funny at all. Like, it was, in the middle part was so repetitive of him just like, going to different people, like just sell, like it just showed up. It showed still like what 20 scenes of him just selling weed.
Oh yeah. I mean,
there were so many, like that was the whole middle of the movie was him just selling weed to, you know, a variety of customers. And some of them were the recurring ones, but it was just so, there was so many of them. And it was so overly long, which I understand is ironic at this point in the podcast, but it was so overly long. And like, I don't know. I thought it was really bad. Like, Alexandra Daddario was barely in it. Her character, again, made no sense. You know, it was like, she was really into him. She had no wants in this movie. She wanted to buy a new couch and, I don't know, hang out with him more again. Yeah. No one knows why, because he sucked. And then, you know, she disappears from the movie, just into the shadow realm. And then comes back later, but like what does she want? Like, what her, she has no goals in life other than to hang out with this guy.
Oh, well, she's got that legal internship.
She's got a legal internship that, again, she never talks about.
Presumably, yeah. Is she in law? No, I guess it's summer break, so.
Yeah, she's probably in law school. This is like between years of law school.
Yeah.
But like, she never, it's not like that ever comes up. Like, she has no character outside of like, I mean, the job is like almost never mentioned too, you know? It's just like, I don't know. If you liked it, God bless you. I just thought it was not anyone's best work, I'd imagine.
I think it's an uncle. I'm giving it an uncle.
Really? Oh no, this is a huge nephew.
I wouldn't say it's a huge uncle, but I think it's an uncle.
No, this is like a hard nephew.
No!
Oh, absolutely. This movie, I think, has like one cultural, little small piece of cultural impact, and it's literally the scenes where she's topless and her boobs are so big you can see them from behind. And like, that's the only thing I think anyone has ever seen from this movie.
Mm.
And I think, honestly, like, they've seen the best part. Because this movie has nothing. Like, I don't know. It just, yeah, I don't know. Like, there's people who are funny in this who are just not funny. Or the people who are funny, people who are otherwise funny are in this movie and just not funny. Like, I don't know. In this movie.
This movie has beaten the funny out of them.
And it's like, it's framed. I mean, yeah, I guess it's like autobiographical, which I think makes it worse. Like, that just seems so like corny, you know, and it's framed by the guy like telling his story in this like, you know, framing device that comes back, you know, near the end, but right before he bikes upstate. But it's just like, this is, oh my God, it's just, it's like so self-indulgent in the worst way. I don't know. I think like it makes me think that they thought this character was more charming than he was, you know?
Yeah, well, and why cast that guy then?
Because I think, like, they thought they were nailing it.
Yikes.
I think they thought, like, oh, my God, yeah, I'm, like, you know, I'm sort of an awkward guy, but I'm funny, and I'm, you know, doing whatever. But it's like, no, that's not what's happening here. Like, because he kept, like, having these sort of, like, awkward, like, I don't know, they're meant to be funny. Like, when he's on stage at the beginning, he's saying, like, I don't like weed. Like, you know, it always makes me paranoid. And, like, I always think, like, the next time I'm going to like it. But, like, I don't. And he's always sort of, like, doing that explanation where he's, like, sort of talking through conversations. Like, he does it with her when they meet. He's always like, you know, I you know, there's two ways. You know, sometimes you're, like, too into it and you bite your lip. Or, like, other times I'm thinking, like, oh, I'm not into it enough. And then, like, he's just talking through all his thoughts in sort of, like, a fast way that, like, could be funny. But it just, like, isn't at all. Like, it just... I don't know. Yeah, I thought this was a huge miss. One of the worst movies we've watched. Which, again, is not like, you know, a murderer's row of movies, but this one was just really tough.
Mm. Yeah, I watched it last night and then again this morning.
You watched this twice, too?
Yeah, I did. Like, I watched it last night thinking I'll just wing it, and then I enjoyed it. So I was like, Jess, you want to watch
it? You enjoyed it? Oh, my God. Well, yeah, God bless you. Someone had to. I mean, it has, like, really low ratings, too. Not that that's, you know, super meaningful.
5.4 on IMDb and 32% Rotten Tomatoes? Yeah, like, not well-received.
What's the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes? Is that what it's at?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Because, like, I mean, usually, sometimes the audiences are more forgiving. No, the audience score is a 32. It didn't seem to get any reviews. Yeah, 32.
That's even worse.
That's not great, because, like, people are really easy on movies. In, when they're reviewing, because most people don't, like, watch movies with, you know, they watch movies with actors they like, or movies they expect to like. But, like, yeah, this one just, this movie had a tough time. And it deserved it. It deserved a tougher time, honestly. So, I don't know. I think that's all we got about this one, though.
Yeah, wrapping it up.
Yeah.
We good?